Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we offer expert advice so you can optimize your sex life, enjoy sexuality, and end the sexual struggle. I'm experimenting.
So dramatic.
Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com for a wealth of resources. Check out our entire podcast archive. We are approaching 240 episodes for your listening pleasure. And if you want to get a weekly dose of our best sex advice and some of our favorite podcast episodes delivered straight to your inbox, come on over to pleasuremechanics.com/free and sign up for the Erotic Essentials or one of our other free mini courses. This is our way of staying in touch with you via email and sharing some advice that you can put into action right away wherever you are on your erotic path. On today's episode, we're going to be getting personal and talking about sex after pregnancy, sex after childbirth. We are 2.5 years into our parenting journey, and we hear from a lot of parents that are at different stages of parenting, and the common question is, how do I get back to the way things were, or how do I reclaim a sex life as a new parent? And we just want to acknowledge right off the bat, this is a huge topic. We've stalled on this for a little while thinking about, should we make this into a whole course? There's so many things to say. This needs to be a bigger conversation than one podcast episode can handle. But in the meantime, we thought we'd at least start the conversation because we had a flurry of these emails recently. So here's the problem. Our cultural expectations about sex and babies and parenting are way off. My first question whenever we hear from a couple that's saying, we just had a baby and I want to have sex again, and how do I do that, is, well, how old is your baby? And so often I get these emails at 6 weeks old, 12 weeks old, a year old. And for most couples, that's just way too soon. So let's dive into this topic. Charlotte, you haven't said anything, and you're the one that just had a baby 2.5 years ago. Do you want to start with any sort of thoughts from your own recent experience?
Well, I have my own experience, but every single one of us has a different experience of childbirth, of having a C-section, of what our hormones are doing afterwards, of how we're bonding with our child, of how we're feeling about our own bodies. I mean, there's just so much variation for each and every woman and each and every family that there really is no one story. And I think that's really, really important to presence up front, that it really is a personal experience and journey that, and there can be no sweeping statements except for everybody is different.
Right. In preparation for this, I took an informal poll on a Facebook group I'm a part of because my sister is a home birth midwife and I'm part of her Facebook community, and it's hundreds of women who share their parenting journeys quite candidly. And the responses I got from them varied from, we had sex 1.5 weeks after I gave birth, to it's been 5 years and we're still waiting, and everything in between. And so let's start by first, yes, acknowledging the variance, and there's going to be a wide range of experiences. So nothing we say is prescriptive. We really just want to give you permission to feel normal, whatever your normal is now, and to give you tools to stay connected as a couple, stay loving, stay affectionate. So when you are both ready to have sex again, you'll want to have sex with the person you are co-parenting with. And just to acknowledge, there's some basic medical stuff, right? So there's the process of being pregnant, which is very strenuous on the body. There's the process of giving birth, either vaginally or through C-section, both of which are intense experiences. And I want to pause there and acknowledge that there are real medical reasons for C-sections. They need to happen sometimes. But the idea of scheduling a C-section to save your vagina is misdirected, because vaginal birth is totally normal and healthy for the vagina. It's still functional as a sexual place after vaginal birth. And C-sections have their own repercussions. It's major abdominal surgery that can sever nerves and change a lot of sexual dynamics itself. So I think there is this myth out there that you can have a C-section and then save your vagina and save yourself as a sexual woman. And I think that's a really dangerous myth that I want to dispel. But whatever kind of birth you end up having, whatever kind of birth you chose, it's a major event. It's one of the most intense things the human body goes through, and therefore you will need recovery time. It's also a major hormonal event. Pregnancy itself really shifts your hormones, and after you have a baby, your hormones shift again. And breastfeeding shifts your hormones yet again. And one of the things our midwife said to us is that breastfeeding has more of an impact on the vaginal lining than birth itself. That the hormones that are released through breastfeeding keep your vaginal wall very thin and delicate and sensitive. And so a lot of the long-term changes to the vagina, and I'm not talking about the vulva and the clitoris, but the vagina, the tube, have more to do with breastfeeding than birth itself. So that was a really interesting thing we learned in our process. And then there's the hormonal changes of constant touch and the bonding process that parents go through with the baby. And so all of these things are physiological. And as a physiological phenomenon, they have variants. So some women have a vaginal birth, and after a few weeks after birth, the vagina feels ready and open to penetration, and that can be her choice. Most medical professionals recommend about 6 weeks to let the area heal up and come back to a state of neutrality. But for some women and some births, that might be 6 months or a year and a half or 2 years.
Especially if there's been any kind of birth trauma or tearing, which right. are also all very, very normal experiences. And of course will change your experience of your own body and does require healing. Yes. It really does require time just for the body to recover. So it's important not to overstep these, but you can be in communication with your birth provider to see when they give you the go-ahead.
So that's the vagina and the vagina's recovery after childbirth. But there's also your full body experience of transforming into a mother and the partner's experience of transforming into a parent. And one of the things we hear a lot from women is that their libido crashes. They don't really feel like sex. They don't even feel like being touched by their partner because they're, quote, touched out. And this is a very real thing. In the first 3 months, which a lot of people call the fourth trimester, the baby is very much wanting to be attached to a human adult. Human babies need adults to survive. If left alone, they can perish. And that's why babies cry so much when they're put down, when they're left alone. They want to be on your skin. And especially if you're breastfeeding, you end up spending a lot of time with this baby on your body, on your skin, on your nipples, and it's a really intense dose of touch for a lot of people. I thought it was interesting in our experience. I'm someone that I love touch. I've grown to love it, getting over my own trauma, but I would get touched out sooner than you, and you are the one breastfeeding. Mm. But you have this much bigger appetite for touch. You love touch and cuddling. So I would feel kind of like anxious and itchy holding the baby for 2 hours while she napped, where you felt like you could kind of luxuriate it. Did you ever feel like you got touched out?
I didn't. I'm beginning to feel that more as with a 2.5-year-old than I ever felt.
We have found your threshold.
I'm beginning to taste that flavor, but I didn't as a kid. When she was a tiny baby, I just was so in love with that experience. But that isn't everyone's experience. Yes.
But I think that's my point, is everyone has a different threshold of the amount of touch they can tolerate. And so people will find this threshold in different places. And a lot of mothers just feel like, ugh, I've been not only touched out, but I've been dealing with pee and poo and vomit and milk and fluids all day long. And their partner comes home from work and hasn't been saturated in that baby land and wants to connect erotically, and they're just so not in that zone. So that's a factor to really consider, is the amount of touch human babies really require. You know, you want to say demand, but it's not like they're little brats demanding it. They really require it to thrive and flourish. And the care of an infant is a very hands-on thing. And that fills up your touch bucket to the point where you might not welcome your partner's touch. And so you need to actively just talk about that. And that's a theme we're going to be going back to again and again in this episode, is how to have an open and honest conversation about these things, so you're not brewing in resentment or feeling your feelings that don't feel like they can be voiced. If you as a new mother can just say, I am touched out, go masturbate, have fun, and then come back and help with the next diaper. If you can give your partner permission to go get extra massages, like, they have touch needs that aren't being fulfilled. The other piece here is that partners, and I'm speaking as a female non-biological parent, a second mother, the other mother, but on kind of behalf of all the dads out there and this partners, you can also choose to get more touch time with the baby. Every opportunity you can, take your shirt off and put that baby on your skin, and that creates a huge bonding experience with the child. They get your smell, they get your warmth.
They hear your heartbeat.
They hear your heartbeat. You attune heartbeats with the baby. You get to smell their fuzzy little heads, which is just so delicious. I blissed out on that more than Charlotte did, actually. But if you take more opportunities to get skin-to-skin time with the baby, you'll be in a little bit more of the same zone. You'll never quite match the breastfeeding partner or the birth partner, but you'll be a little bit more equalized in terms of how much touch time you're getting with the baby and how much bonding you're feeling with the baby. And I think that's important, so you're not in such disparate zones.
And that you're all having that experience together. It's not that she is having an experience with the kid and you're kind of an outsider, but you're involved in that triangulation.
Right.
Well,
we do hear that from a lot of dads who feel like, wow, not only am I not getting sex anymore, but you're in love with this new person, and I feel a little bit like a third wheel. And so getting more involved in parenting, and so many dads are nowadays, which is so beautiful, but doing more of the parent, the diapering, the cuddling, the holding, the rocking. And there are limitations to what you can do if you're not breastfeeding versus if you are, but taking every opportunity to touch and cuddle. And we did a lot of family cuddle time, where you would hold the baby, I would hold you, and we would rest together. And that was a beautiful thing.
And that's kind of a wonderful image, I think, for how partners can show up for the person that has given birth. I also just want to acknowledge, of course, there are many people who are not breastfeeding. There are many second parents who are not dads, who are also women. There are lots of two-dad partners where there is no woman. You know, there's many different family and situations.
We've been reading a lot of books about that recently. All the different kinds of families.
So just to put that out there. So hear yourself in whatever your situation is as we're speaking. But I think that not only is a person who is breastfeeding dealing with liquids all day, bodily fluids all day, they're also dealing with being needed all day. And so if there is a partner that's then coming to them with sexual needs, that just feels like a lot. But the role of the person who is a little bit, who is not, but the role of the person who is not doing all of the...
I think let's use the language of primary caretaker and partner.
Okay.
And primary caretaker may be breastfeeding, may not, maybe going back to work, may not.
Right.
But usually there's one person that's doing more of the time, especially, we're talking now the first 3-6 months.
And yeah, okay, there's so many, and maybe you have somebody else that's doing that, but okay, yeah. So that, so the person, the second...
The partner.
The partner
of the primary caretaker.
Could really focus on giving touch and giving some kind of loving acts of service to the primary caretaker, because it is an exhausting and, I mean, it's just very involving, as you can
imagine. So what are some of those acts?
So this is where we, of course, are going to say massage, if the partner wants it, of course.
What I did a lot for you is feed you.
Yeah, and that was really helpful.
I brought you a lot of small bites of food, hydrated you, made you a lot of tea.
Yeah.
I really felt like it was I was taking care of you so you could take care of the baby.
And that was so relieving.
And I took a lot of care of the baby too, but I felt like there was this conduit where I knew you were giving so much of your body, having already been through 9 months of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You were then literally being drained of this life force of milk and energy. And so my goal was all of the things I could do to fill you up so you could then pass that love on to our daughter.
And I really appreciated that, and it was so valuable and helpful. And sometimes for me that did look like shoulder massages, because when you're nursing, your shoulders are getting really constricted, and massage of any kind, nourishing my body, that was really valuable.
But I think it takes stepping outside of your own needs to be in that act of service and to have the endurance. Because that's the thing about parenting, you discover really quickly, is that it is a marathon. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to take care of someone who's sick for a day or two and get them soup, and that can be exhausting. But to take care of someone for 9 months, a year, in this ongoing way, you have to kind of be humbled and recognize your own needs, find ways to take care of them, whether that's more masturbation, getting more massage, carving out little times to like go hang out with your friends, while recognizing there's this infant at home and you can't go out and party the same way you used to. Like, that's another thing here that just needs to be acknowledged, is life changes so dramatically when you become a parent. There's nothing that can prepare you for it. And that includes your sex life. And so when I see in these emails, when will it get back to the way things were? The answer is never. Your life is forever changed as a parent, and your sex life is forever changed as a parent. Some of these are subtle psychological shifts where your idea of priorities shift. And some are just really big things, like how much sleep you get and the amount of stress in your life. And so the goal is not to reclaim those young, lusty years of when you were new young lovers and you couldn't keep your hands off of each other. The goal becomes, how do we have a beautiful sexual relationship in the long run? How do our sexual needs be fulfilled as they return? How do we stay connected as a couple so we actually want to have sex with each other when our libidos come back? That's so much of what it's about for me, is staying connected, staying as a team, and staying affectionate and loving with each other through the stressful demands of pregnancy and childbirth and parenting, so that when you're ready to have sex again, it's your partner you want to have sex with.
So that is a much bigger subject. That is about having a relationship that feels connected. And
see our other 233 podcasts.
But I think it's so true. And it's finding small micro moments of connection and even eroticism, whether that is a slow kiss in the kitchen, whether that is a dance in the living room. Like, it's creating small moments to be connected as lovers, or to remember your eroticism.
So what was your experience? Because you are a very sexual woman. Mm. You had a high libido before having a baby. Mm. What was your experience of like feeling your sexuality return? Like, what was that process like over the 2.5 years?
For me, it was really partly about managing a very practical issue of time and space. Where do I go to masturbate when I want to do that? We co-slept, and I didn't feel comfortable bringing my eroticism near our child. Other people have different opinions about that and have different feelings. Like, that just didn't feel right for me. And so
you would find yourself in our office, on the rug in our office, having masturbation sessions late at night.
Like, the wall. Like, I mean, there was a really hilarious moment, though. I was just like, this is not ideal, but I'm just making it work. I was standing up against the wall in the hallway. You guys were sleeping. The dishwasher was on. At this point, we were having a mouse issue. I could hear a mouse. It was like the most unsexy moment of all time. And I was just like, I need to have a release. I didn't feel like there was space in either of the rooms. Like, it was just like such a need moment, just making it work. Uh-huh. It's not an ideal situation, but here we go.
So your kind of appetite for sex returned before the logistics
were figured out.
Yeah.
And I felt like, it, just because of the nature of how we chose to parent, one of us was often with the kid, and so it was more about us just having our own solo life and keeping our eroticism alive as individuals before we could kind of get back to each other. We had lots of really sweet, loving, and even sexy moments, whether that was through massage or just touch, that was kind of around. So I felt like I felt very connected and like our eroticism was alive, but we weren't having penetrative intercourse for a while because it was...
Right. Well, and our own story is complicated by the fact that about a year into our daughter's life, I started getting really sick and had a very swift decline, almost died, and then had to recover. And so I was completely out of commission, like couldn't move, really intense pain. Like, I was so not in the sexual zone. And I think you were just emerging back into your sexuality as I got sick. And so we kind of missed boats that way. Which is to say, that's not going to be everyone's story. But other life events might stack up upon this. And especially, they're saying, the generation of people that are having kids now have this double thing where often they have young kids and aging parents. As people have kids later in life, instead of when you're 18 or 20, when you're 30 or 35, you also have the burden of taking care of aging parents, which we had this week when I was sitting in the hospital parking lot and you were inside with your mother who's been ill, and I was taking care of our baby, it's just a lot. And the economy is in a wreck right now. Like, some people have financial burdens, so parenting is just one layer of stress in your life. It's just one layer of logistical change, and then others might get stacked up, which makes it even more important to stay in communication as a couple. And for me, what I really remember is in that first year being very committed to the joy of being parents, to the joy and affection, and really being our erotic energy, and I'm going to dare to say this, but our erotic energy was focused as parents. Which is not to say parenting is a sexual thing. And I think a lot of us refuse to talk about the eroticism of being a parent because we have such hysteria around children. But for me, what that means is our life force energy was going towards being parents. All of our physical energy, our physical affection, the amount of touch, the sensual nature of our life was very much about being parents together. And we fully embraced that and recognized it as a stage. And I think that's the other key takeaway here, is to actively talk about this as a temporary stage that might last a few years. It might last a little bit longer if you have multiple kids in a row. If you have three kids, it might be 2 to 6 years of ongoing being in this stage together. That's intense, but you're on that journey together. And if you can connect on that level of like, we're going to do this as well as we can together and stay erotically alive through the joy. And for me now, like, playgrounds are this very exciting zone where I'm like watching her get to climb and move her body in different ways and watching her grow up. And every time we go back to the playground, there seems to be a different thing she can do with her body. And I'm stretching and moving my body on the equipment, and we're playing together. We're laughing together. And I find so much erotic joy in that play.
But you're really speaking about eroticism in this larger context that is about aliveness and feeling this playful
energy.
Yeah.
Yes. So that which gives you that
life.
Yes, vitality. Mm. That for me is my working definition of eroticism versus sexuality. Is eroticism is all of this sensual and emotional energy and vitality of life. And it's a different source than when you're 20 and really focused on the sexual. And if you can harness that and really be in it fully and laugh and play together as much as you're stressed out, but be in the joy of parenting, then I think you can keep your erotic connection alive in this totally different version.
Absolutely. I felt like the first year of her life, I felt more connected to you probably than ever. I felt like it was... I mean, probably the most beautiful year of my life.
Yeah.
It was so rich in awe and wonder and delight and gratitude and love. I mean, it was really an exquisite, very erotically alive year.
Yeah.
That was beyond my wildest hopes. I mean, I really daily felt like, this is extraordinary, and I'm so grateful. And I know that isn't everyone's story. Everyone has a different story, but it is...
There's an opportunity.
There's an opportunity. And I think we're talking about some of the challenges that are present with combining our sexuality and raising children. But there is also a lot of beauty, and you're gaining so much by being a parent. It's really one of the most extraordinary things in the world. And so it just becomes, it becomes different. It's a different quality. But I don't want you to think that it's lesser than or worse than. It's just...
Well, and I think, again, this idea of really thinking of it as a stage and then thinking of a long-term game plan. If you recognize that you're going to be in this new stage of being a young parent for 2, 3, 4 years, and then your life will change again as kids go to school and become more independent, and then your life will change again as your kids become teenagers and want less and less to do with you, and then your life changes again if they leave the house or go off to college. You have all of these stages to go through together as a couple. And so it becomes actively talking about those stages and figuring out the difference between your needs and wants. And this is something parents become very versed in, because kids have a difference between needs and wants. And as babies, they're the same thing. And then they start to want things that they don't need. And you have to start saying no to them. And you can put those skills to work in your own sexuality of realizing, I really need to ejaculate tonight. Like, I'm feeling pent up. I really need 15 minutes to masturbate. I'm going to take an extended shower and give myself that touch because I know my partner is not available.
Or I really, my dishwasher hearing the mouth. Yes. That's the war moment.
Or I really need to connect with my partner in the sexual zone. And so we need to figure out whether that's babysitting or getting our friends to come over and take the kids on a walk together so we have some time together. And then coming to that moment without an agenda, right? And recognizing your partner might not be in the same space as you are, but really might, what you need might just be to have a naked cuddle and look each other in the eyes and be like, we're getting through this, baby. You know, we're doing this. What are your needs? And if you can become more and more specific with your needs versus this vague sense of, I want a sex life back again and things aren't the way they used to be and I'm feeling ignored as a sexual being, that's the place of struggle and suffering. But if you can articulate your needs and come to your partner with a very clear sense of what your body is needing, what your soul is needing, what you need to feel more connected in your relationship, then you can work out a game plan together. And there's something about parenting that becomes very strategic. It's like, all right, we need to get to this place, but she needs to have her diaper changed. Like, you become actually quite skilled in managing a lot of needs. And so your sexuality gets to be part of that list. You can't ignore yourself as a sexual being for 3 years and then expect us to like pop back up in place when the kids are a little more grown. You need to pay attention, but you also need to acknowledge that maybe your sex life is going to change for a while and it's going to have to look different how your needs get addressed.
Yeah, and especially at a time where there's a lot going on and you kind of need to be at your best if you can, being sourced by your own sexuality, by having orgasms that feel really good, can be a really important source of nourishment for yourself, whether that is solo or partnered. But having this conversation together as a couple and saying, if one of you is in the place where you're just not interested and the other person is really needing some more, figuring out what will work for you guys as a couple. Is it really giving permission to say, go enjoy porn and masturbation? I'm not that available right now, but I would love you to give me back massages and tell me that I look beautiful while I have milk all over my shirt, or, you know, whatever's going to, or can you take the kids for Saturday morning and let me have a bath and work out and just rest? Like, that will help me feel like a person so that I'm even interested in thinking about sexuality on my own or with you. I'm not sure yet. You know, there's all these creative ways. Or if you decide that you do want to be having sex, have babysitters help you take the kids out of the house and you stay in the house. I think this is one of the most important little things for parents to do for having sex. Don't think about it has to be at night. It can be in the middle of the day, just with your kid out of the house, or when they're napping, depending on your level of comfort with sexuality in terms of kids being in the house.
Or kids get taken care of in the house and you get a hotel room if you can afford it.
Sure, that's ideal.
Sometimes that works for people.
It depends on your financial situation. But you got to get creative and problem solve and what your specific situation is, what your needs are. I can't have sex if she is in the house or even within a mile of the home. I have discovered, which is pretty extreme, I understand.
Yeah.
But I cannot relax into it. We have these huge glass doors on the by our bedroom, and if she's down the hill and I think she might walk up the hill, I just can't really relax into it.
Whereas other couples will have sex with kids in bed with them.
Yeah.
So beyond our comfort zone, but that works for some people, and it's a cultural thing. And certainly over human history, most sex has been done with kids far less than a mile away.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that if that's in your comfort zone, but you have to know what works for you as an erotic being. And you like to go deep into erotic trance. You like a lot of time and preparation.
Yeah.
So it's a different requirement.
Right.
But we stay connected with tons of affectionate touch. So if we're not having sex once a week or even once a month, we're still highly connected physically, emotionally. I think the key here for me is preventing resentment,
mm-hmm.
not having either partner feel abandoned,
mm-hmm.
not having either partner feel isolated, and recognizing that this is a very particular, intense stage that you will get through together, and on the other side, you will be there for each other and wanting to have sex with each other. And whether the other side is 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, that really doesn't matter. What matters is that you feel like you're a team. You feel like you're still together as partners. And that's how you prevent the long-term fallout and prevent your marriage from erotically collapsing under the weight and stress of being a new parent.
So you're talking about keeping the connection between the two of you alive, whatever the intercourse situation is.
Right.
And
for that, you know, we talked about alternative to intercourses so much that I'm not mentioning them, but can you lie in bed while your partner masturbates and your baby's sleeping in the next room and, like, engage with them that way? You know, do they enjoy hand jobs more? Like, there's so many alternatives to intercourse that we talk about so much on this podcast.
Can you use your breasts to stimulate their penis so that they can have an orgasm, but it isn't penetrating your body? It's kind of low effort. Sometimes they can be on top of you, you're lying down, depends on what your bodies are like. You know, there's all these ways that you can experience pleasure and connection where you're not really giving of your body, which can be helpful for a lot of people. So pulling apart what is intercourse, what is sex, yeah, we've talked about it so much. Get creative. And maybe she wants to experience clitoral orgasms but not have penetration.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
And you can experiment with all these alternatives. It's just important that they don't feel lesser than, that they don't feel like, oh, I'm getting the consolation prize of a hand job. It's like, no, that hand job is a real gift. It counts just as much as anything else. And the goal, again, is that a few years from now, she'll want to accept you back into her body when her vagina is ready, when her full body is ready, when her sexual spirit is alive and has emerged out of this intense cauldron of new motherhood, new parenthood, that she'll want you. And so how do you make it that you want each other on the other side of this new parent gauntlet? It's about preventing resentment. It's about respect. It's a lot about communication. But it's also about shattering these cultural expectations. And I'm not going to say too much about this because I could go on and on and on, but I'm really trying to explore this idea of how much of this, like, good wife, dutiful wife syndrome is so internalized in women that they allow themselves to have intercourse, they allow themselves to be penetrated before they're really ready, just to satisfy their partner, just to kind of give him what they think he needs, and they override their own body signals, they override their own feelings in order to be the dutiful wife and have intercourse. And we did a podcast a few episodes back out of Sex Out of Obligation and how toxic it can be. And so I just really want to give women permission to be go at their own pace. And it's important that we don't have sex just out of obligation, but that our body really wants to be having the sex that it's having at every moment of our relationship. That's really important to me, and there's a lot more to say about it. If you haven't listened to our podcast, Sex Out of Obligation, it's a really good one to listen to prevent long-term resentment from building up in your relationship. In the theme of this episode, our sick daughter has just started crying in the other room. We do all of the recording and editing and posting of the podcasts ourselves. We are a two-woman operation here at the Pleasure Mechanics headquarters, and life gets really full sometimes. Right now, we have a toddler and a sick mother to look after. And last week, we weren't able to bring you a new podcast, and so we shared a favorite from our archives. We may have to do that periodically as we head into summer, but we do our best to bring you a new podcast episode every week and to respond to your emails as quickly as we can. As this show grows, I'm getting more and more emails, and so it's becoming more difficult to respond to each one individually, but I do my very best and do late night marathons of email answering sometimes. But if you've written to me in the past and I haven't gotten back to you, you are always welcome to email me again and remind me of your question, especially if it's an urgent one or something you want some advice about right away, and I'll do my very best to get back to you. Yeah, I love seeing a full inbox full of your questions and comments and success stories. We really do love hearing from you. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com/free and sign up for the Erotic Essentials to get our curated email delivery of our best sex advice and explore our premium online multimedia courses when you are ready to master new erotic skills like couples massage, which is great for new parents, or erotic spanking, which might be a great thing to explore a little down the line, or foreplay mastery, or anal play, or prostate play. Whatever it is you are ready to explore, we have a course for you, and use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. And we don't say it often, but you may notice that this podcast doesn't have any advertisers. We don't interrupt the show with messages from sponsors like Blue Apron or Casper or any of these other podcast advertisers that you'll hear on all of your other favorite podcasts. We keep it intimate, just you and us. And all of the work we do is fully supported by your purchases of the online mastery courses. That's our way of giving you amazing content that can change your life, and you give to us by supporting us financially and keeping this show going and keeping our work going as the Pleasure Mechanics. So we really appreciate when you buy the online courses and know that we are doing all of this work for you and for the world to make this world a sexier, happier, healthier place. One stroke at a time. Charlotte had to run and take care of our daughter, who has a bit of a summer cold, so I'm going to sign off on my own here. I am Chris. She's Charlotte. We're the Pleasure Mechanics, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.